Good morning. Some celebrity birthday parties really are over the top, aren't they? Earlier in December, I noticed this article about the rap artist Jay-Z and his 40th birthday party. Jay-Z marked turning 40 with the help of his A-list pals in the Dominican Republic at the weekend. Kanye West, Oprah Winfrey, Alicia Keys, and Kate Hudson were among the stars flown from New York by private jet to the Casa de Campo Resort. The rapper's wife, Beyoncé Knowles, and his mum, Gloria, were the guests of honour. Following a slap-up meal, including caviar and vintage Dom Perignon champagne, partygoers were treated to performances from Kanye and P. Diddy. Jay-Z even took to the stage with Alicia Keys to sing their duet, Empire State of Mind. The night came to a close with a stunning fireworks display. Not bad, eh? But that is small time compared to the Sultan of Brunei's 1996 bash for his 50th birthday, thought to be the most expensive and extravagant birthday party ever. At the $27 million gala, guests were treated to a $16 million Michael Jackson concert, and once again, the world's most exquisite caviar and champagne seems to be a feature at these kind of things. But do you know, even that is small time compared to the way that we celebrate Jesus' birthday every year. The figures are not in for this year, of course, but last year, the Australian Bureau of Statistics estimates that Australians spent about $18 billion on Christmas celebrations. $18 billion. Now, I know that not everyone is consciously celebrating in honour of Jesus, but just for a moment, let's imagine that they are. Okay, it is Christ Mass, after all. What do you think? Is it all too much? It's a bit over the top? This morning, I want to say, no, it's not. Even if all that money was splashed out in Jesus' honour, he would deserve every cent. Jesus is so great that no celebration would be too much. And no other celebrity even comes close to deserving the honours that Jesus does. Jesus stands alone. In your outlines this morning, we've printed a short passage from the Bible, and I want to read that for us now. It's over on the right-hand side there. You might like to follow along. It's from the first chapter of John's Gospel. So John, one of Jesus' best friends when he was here on earth, he writes this: "The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." I want to highlight three ways in this passage in which Jesus stands alone. His life story stands alone. Barack Obama is a famous person today who has a remarkable life story. His father was a man from Kenya who married an American woman while he was studying in Hawaii. Obama's stepfather was an Indonesian man, and he spent a number of his childhood years growing up in Indonesia. And then he returned to Hawaii, went on to study law in Chicago, and now has become the first ever black president of the United States. It's quite a story. But Jesus' life story is far more remarkable than President Obama. This passage in John chapter 1 tells us that Jesus' birth wasn't the beginning of his story. He came into the world. The world was made through him, in verse 10. He became flesh, in verse 14. In other words, the Creator, God's Son, who has existed for all eternity, stepped into space and time at the birth of baby Jesus. During his lifetime, he was not recognized or celebrated in any significant way. See in verse 10, though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. It's just like the Isaiah character said to us earlier. He was not a winner in the normal sense of the word. He suffered. He was humiliated. There was no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. The people of the time decided that he was cursed by God, especially when he was strung up on a cross. Jesus' life story didn't start with his birth, and it didn't end with his death either. His mother Mary was just one of many, many witnesses who claimed to have seen Jesus more alive than ever after his death and his burial. And those witnesses in different ways talk about the glory of the risen Jesus. Perhaps Thomas, the doubting disciple, captures it best. When he finally sees the risen Jesus after about a week, he just says, "My Lord and my God." So Jesus' life story stands alone. Secondly, his character stands alone. Verse 14 again. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Jesus was so far above us human creatures. We can't comprehend his wealth, his power, his greatness as God the Son. And yet he stooped down to draw near to us, to become one of us. I have noticed that one of the ways that celebrities today use their money and their power is to keep the rest of the world away. Okay, they build big houses with high fences, or they buy a private island and they hire bodyguards to make sure that fans don't get too close. And some of them might accept you as a friend on Facebook, but that's about as close as any of us are going to get to them. Jesus humbled himself and drew near to us. Well, look at the second half of verse 14. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. As far as John is concerned, Jesus' glory is best seen in his character of grace and truth. I won't say much about the truth side of that, except that the Jesus we read about in the Bible is a surprisingly strong man. He would not be pushed around or intimidated by the power merchants of his day. He lived and he spoke in line with God's truth. And he was full of grace. As the Mary character said to us earlier, he was so kind to the weak and the desperate. He had time for people that everyone else had given up on. A good definition of grace is love shown to the undeserving. And that's exactly how Jesus lived. He loved those who had turned their backs on God. He loved even the people who rejected him. He loved them and us so much that he gave up his life in service of us. As he hung there on the cross, one of the last things he said before he died was, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." I don't know about you, but for me it feels longer than 6 weeks ago that Tiger Woods was in Australia. Do you remember the media coverage back then? He was the shiny golf superstar. And people flocked in their thousands just to catch a glimpse of him. Now, I'm not sure why I have been shocked over the last few weeks at what has come to light about his secret life. Because it happens over and over again with celebrities. You know, their carefully crafted image looks very shiny, but scratch the surface and it gets ugly real fast. But not with Jesus. At one stage, Jesus' enemies were saying some very rude things about him. And he said to them, "Can any of you prove me guilty of sin?" It was a challenge. Do some digging. Ask around. See if you can find anything. And if there was anything to be found, they would have found it. They were very motivated. But Jesus was clean. The deeper you dig with Jesus, the more impressive he is. His character of humility, of grace, of love. He stands alone. His achievements stand alone. There's no doubt that some of the celebrities of today have achieved great things. Michael Jackson could sing and dance exceptionally well. His Thriller album is still the best-selling album of all time, and he earned about $500 million in royalties. Tiger Woods can hit a little white ball around a golf course better than just about anyone. And this month he was named the athlete of the decade. I could go on. But Jesus' achievements are in a different league altogether. Have a look at verse 12 of our Bible passage. "Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God." Jesus has made it possible for us, lost and helpless humans, to become children of God. Where we once deserved punishment, now we can expect forgiveness and a warm welcome from God. How has he managed to pull that off? I mean, that has got to be the most significant achievement of all time. He paid the ultimate price. Jesus gave up his life to pay the penalty that each one of us deserves for our poor treatment of God. And so for all who receive Jesus, who accept that he is humanity's saviour, God offers forgiveness and a fresh start. Jesus has also conquered death and brought in the new age of God's kingdom. So for all who receive Jesus, who accept that he is humanity's king, God offers the gift of his Spirit to work in our lives and make us new from the inside out. The CV of Jesus' achievements is a long, long list of transformed individuals, starting with those first disciples who almost overnight were transformed from quivering cowards into bold preachers of the risen Jesus. And the list has grown and grown until today there are followers of Jesus in every nation on the planet. Jesus has transformed individuals, and in doing that, he has transformed the world. I have a little book here called What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? And the authors try to assess the impact of Jesus of Nazareth on the world as we know it. It is just staggering. In education and politics and science and medicine and morality and economics and the family and the arts, you name it, and Jesus has influenced it for good. There is no one else like him. Let me quote from a small piece written in the 19th century called One Solitary Life. After talking about Jesus' obscure birth and his shameful death, it finishes like this. "All the armies that ever marched, all the navies that ever sailed, all the parliaments that ever sat, all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man on this earth as much as that one solitary life. So let me ask you, are you a fan of this Jesus? All of us who've been up the front here this morning are big fans of Jesus. And we're glad that Christmas gives us another excuse to make a big deal about Jesus. We think Jesus is so great that everyone ought to be a fan. Sometimes I hear about people who are consumed with one celebrity or another, and it's often a bit sad. When my wife was a teenager, she had a friend who was obsessed with Michael Jackson. Her posters of Michael Jackson covered every square inch of her walls. She dressed like Michael Jackson. At her 21st birthday, in her speech, she thanked Michael Jackson for helping her to become the person that she was today. Well, there's a man called John Ziegler. Have you heard about him? He set up the First Church of Tiger Woods in order to celebrate the coming of the true Messiah. He's since resigned from that post. Interesting to know. Now, we look at that and laugh, or we think that's a bit weird, because we know, for one reason or another, the celebrity is not worth that kind of devotion. But Jesus is worthy. He is a celebrity worth celebrating. And amazingly, he wants a much closer relationship with you and me than just being friends on Facebook. He wants to be involved in our lives. He wants us to talk to him. He wants to direct our lives for good. So if you're already a fan, join us in celebrating Jesus this Christmas time. Don't hold back. Be big and bold about how great Jesus is. If you haven't been a fan, or if you've just been that Facebook kind of fan, let me encourage you to get into Jesus this Christmas and in the new year. We have these little books here called The Essential Jesus. We would love for you just to take a copy home and read it. We've got church here again on Christmas Day and each Sunday. And if you want a chance to ask your questions and find out more, let us know you want to be part of our little intro course called Simply Christianity. I think the next one's coming up start of Feb. They happen pretty regularly here. So just let us know that you're interested in that and we'll get in contact with you and make sure you can be a part of it. Jesus has transformed my life for good. Lots and lots of people here would say exactly the same thing. I need to finish up now, but we'd love to keep talking afterwards if you want to find out more. I wonder if I can ask everyone to just grab out these little welcome slips that you'll find in your outline there. We're going to just spend a moment filling those in now. We'd especially like to know if you're a visitor here with us. Just let us know that you've been with us. Pop down your name and some contact details. But if this morning you think, yeah, I would like to be a fan of Jesus in a much more committed way, why don't you write that down on there? And there's some boxes you can tick as well. And we'll get in contact with you. So the band's just going to play some music for a minute or so before we launch into our new song, and we'll spend a moment filling those in now.